Today's share in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Yevamos Daf Kuf Chof. We're getting very close to the end of this Masechta, and we're going to pick up, we already did this yesterday, but we're going to chaz it over from Kuf Yud Tes Omud Beis, five lines from the bottom. We quote the Mishnah. The Mishnah had said, Nisyadmu Umesu HaYevamim Asur Linosei. If you remember the case from yesterday, we had two unrelated women who were married to two brothers, and there were two other brothers. So we have Reuven, who's married to Sarah, and we have Shimon, who's married to Leah. They're unrelated wives, but they're married to two brothers. And we have no evidence that Reuven and Shimon died other than the testimony of each of their respective wives. So if that was the only situation, each of them, as we had said previously, would be believed to say that their own husband was dead, but the Yevama, the other woman, would not be believed to now be going off to marry anybody that she wants to, but she would have to wait until we had definitive evidence that her Yavam had passed away. So Sarah could not go and get married Lashuk because she'd have to have definitive evidence that Shimon was dead. And likewise, Leah could not go get married because she wouldn't have definitive evidence that Reuven was dead. And that's because we don't believe the two sisters-in-laws in this situation. They were the five women they were included in the five women that we didn't accept their testimony. That's just a quick reminder. Now here in this case, we also had two other brothers, Levi and Yehuda. So here, there certainly is no problem. We said, when Sarah says that her husband Reuven died, she is believed. Again, it was during peacetime, and there was peace between them. So she's believed, and she can even undergo Yibam, which she does with Levi. And likewise, Leah is believed to say that her husband Shimon passed away, and she undergoes Yibam with Yehuda, the other brother. And now, Nebuch, Levi, and Yehuda both die. So in this situation, Nisyabmu, Umesu HaYivamim, if both Levi and Yehuda died after the Yibam with Sarah and Leah occurred, so the Mishnah said that Asurin Linasi, now they fall back into the original position that they don't have proof that Reuven and Shimon respectively were dead for the other person, and therefore they can't go and marry Lashuk. However, Rabbi Elazar disagreed. Rabbi Elazar Omer, since they were allowed to go do Yibum with Levi and Yehuda, so obviously their husbands must be dead, and therefore Huchul Chaladu, now allowed to marry anybody else. So we had said, boy, Rava wants to know, what's the reasoning of Rabbi Elazar? My time to Rabbi Elazar, two possibilities. Mishum de Sovar, does he hold that Sarah Me'ida Lechaverta? He disagrees with the previous Mishnah, where we learned that the five women that aren't allowed to testify include these two women that could potentially become Sarah's because, let's say Shimon dies, so then Leah would then have to undergo Yibam with Reuven. It could become, if she does Yibam, she would become the co-wife of Sarah. So therefore, they're not believed, according to the Mishnah that we had previously. But maybe Rabbi Elazar disagrees with that. Rabbi Elazar maybe holds Mishum Diksavat Tzara Me'idah L'Chaverta. He doesn't hold from that. And it says one Tzara could, in fact, testify for the other Tzara because it's far-fetched to think that they would be potentially interested in ruining it for the other person by falsely saying that the husband was dead. Or do we say, no, well, Dilma, no, Mishum Dihi Lo Mikalkal Nafsha, because she's getting married herself. So therefore, she's believed to say that her husband died and she can get married. So therefore, from the point of view of the Tzara, she's also believed to say that the Yavim is dead. New Gemara says, L'may Nafkamina, we turn to Kuf Chof. So the Nafkamina would be, Lien Suvi L'Tzara Mikame Dida. Can, in this situation where both Sarah and Leah now claim that they're free to get married, their husbands never passed away, would Leah, for example, be allowed to go and get married and not undergo Yibam even before Sarah went and got married? So that would be the Nafkamina. Lien Suvi L'Tzara Mikame Dida. To allow the Tzara to go get married even though the other one hadn't yet gotten married. Do we say, if the reasoning is because we trust them, we hold that one Sarah could testify for the other, so it doesn't make any difference if she got married or not. We were allowed to go get married even though the Tzara didn't get married. On the other hand, if you say that there's no way she would get married unless it was true, because otherwise she would be hurting herself. So then, Insiv, if she got married, yes, but Mansvin and Lola Tsar, then only then would we allow the Tsar to get married. But in Lo Insiv, but if she didn't get married herself, then we have to be concerned that she might falsely state that her husband was dead, so this woman would go get married and then would be Mekukelis. So in this situation, only if she got married, Mansvin and Lola Tsar, but Elo Insiv, Lo Mansvin and Lo. So that's the question, and the Gemara is, my, what is Rabbi Elazar's opinion? So Gemara says, Toshma, learn from our Mishnah. Look at the case of our Mishnah, where we had said that when they married Levi and Yehuda, they got married to Levi and Yehuda. Rabbi Elazar, Omer, Ho'ul, V'hutru, L'Yavim, V'hutru, L'Choladim. Since they actually got married to Levi and Yehuda, that's why they believed. Now, if you're telling me, Yamis, Mishlom, Adhi, Lo, Makakul, and Avshah, the reasoning is because she would never go and hurt herself. So once she does something that would be a hurting for herself, we can take it to the bank to say that she's telling us the truth. Savinullah. So since she got married, so then the other one can get married as well. But if you're saying the reasoning is that we don't think there's kitata between them, we don't think there's a fight between them, that the tzar is allowed to go and testify on behalf of the other one, and we accept it, even if she's not demonstrating that she's hurting herself by marrying someone else, that she doesn't even have to go marry somebody else, but we believe her. So then, I don't understand the Mishnah. So then even if she didn't get married to Levi, so the other one should be allowed to go get married to Yehuda. What do you see from here? So the reasoning clearly is because they actually got married. And if she's testifying that Reuven died, and therefore Leah is allowed to go get married because Shimon's not around, so clearly it must be only because she got married herself. And therefore, it's only because she got married. Mishum de insiv hu, v'lo mekalkel anasha. And since she got married, that demonstrates that it must be real, because otherwise she'd be hurting herself, and there's no way she'd hurt herself. So the Gemara says, no, seems to have the answer. But the Gemara says, not necessarily so. Rabbi Elazar l'dvarim karmelu. Rabbi Elazar is saying to the Chachamim, he says, according to me, l'didi tzar me'id l'chaverta, I hold that we trust them. There is no ketatin assumed between the two tzaros over here, between these potential tzaros, and therefore, I would believe them no matter what. And therefore, the afogadlo insiv, even though they did not get married, min savinan law, the other one can get married based upon the first one's testimony. But according to you, Chachamim, el'ditru, that you say that we don't trust these two potential tzoros to testify about the other one's husband, so el ditru, at least be mode, oduli mihas, the hechod insiv min savinan law, that if they in fact got married, they would be makalka themselves if it wasn't true. So at least be moda that in the situation where they actually got married themselves, so then there's no way that they would be makalka themselves just to go and get the other one. So therefore, mishum dihi lo makalka l'nafsha. So here, in this situation, since there's no way she would get married if it wasn't really true, because otherwise she'd be hurting herself. So therefore, admit to me that. Gemara says, no, not necessarily so. The Chacham say, no, in this situation we could apply the Pasuk, Rabbanon, Tomus Nafshi in Plishtim, the Pasuk that we had previously, Hudika Avda, that this woman says, no, it's worthwhile to me to even be Makalka myself as long as I'm getting her. People do sometimes very, very strange things. People have such a hatred for somebody else, have such a dislike for someone else, that they're willing to suffer themselves. They literally cut their nose off despite their face. They're willing to do that over here. And that's the concept of Thomas Nashi Plishtim. That Shimshon HaTzadik, he said, I don't really care if I die. I'm going to take vengeance for HaKadosh Baruch Hu upon the Plishtim. Okay. Now the Gemara continues and says, try again. Toshma, see if we can see what Rabbi Elazar's opinion is for the following brisa. If a woman and her husband go to the Medina Sayyam, and she comes back, she says, Nebuch, my husband died, so we believe her. So, as we mentioned previously, as long as there was peace between them and peace in the world, she's allowed to be believed and she can go marry. That's what the din is. However, but nevertheless, if there's a co-wife there, we don't allow the co-wife to go get married, because the co-wives are certainly in the group of the five people that would have ketata, that would have dislike for each other, and therefore there's a potential that they would lie in order to get the other one in trouble. But in this brisa, Rabbi Elazar disagrees. Rabbi Elazar omer ho, the hutra he, hutra nami tzarasa. Rabbi Elazar says, no, since this wife is getting remarried, so then the co-wife is also allowed to get remarried. Now, how come? In this situation, it's just permitted for her to get married. It didn't say that she did get married, so it must be that, in fact, Rabbi Elazar's opinion is that we believe the co-wives. So it says, Lav Dafka Ema, you could reread the Brice and say, Ho Hutra Venises, that what happened over here was she was given permission to get married, and she did get married. And only then is it Sarah allowed to get married as well, because otherwise she would be Makal Keles herself if she really wasn't telling the truth. Okay. Murray says, wait a second, in this situation, why don't we say that the reason why the co-wife is allowed to go and get married is because she actually got a divorce while she was overseas. That in fact she got a covert get, and therefore this get is going to allow her to get married. And now she's saying, oh, the husband died, so now the co-wife, who wasn't divorced and is still married to the original husband, so this wicked co-wife is going to lie because she's going to be okay. She's not going to be Mekalkeles herself if she gets married. She can always pull out her divorce later on. But she's going to cause the wife who still is married to chas v'shalom think that her husband is dead and get married. And oy vavoy, all those terrible complications that we talked about early in the Masechta would occur. Can't live with the first husband, can't live with the second husband, children, mamzerim, etc. So why don't we concern ourselves with that? Behind the karma, and the reason why she says, oh, I'm getting married, so therefore the co-wife can get married, is she's, her intention is solely, because she has a get. So she's doing this solely to go and hurt her co-wife, her former co-wife. So the says, no, you're 100% correct that this is a concern. But that would be true only if she married a Yisrael. He did in civil Yisrael, Hachanami, you'd be 100% correct. She had a get. There's no problem remarrying Yisrael, and then she could, in fact, get married with it. The lie that she's saying that the husband is dead could really cause a terrible kilkel for the other co-wife. So if she were to marry Yisrael, you're right, we wouldn't accept her. However, you know what we're talking about over here? My eskinan, the insibla kohen. Oh, if she was really divorced, then she wouldn't be allowed to marry a kohen. And then she would be Mikal Kelis herself. So therefore, if she goes and marries a kohen, so then we have to say, just like she doesn't want to be Mikal Kelis herself, therefore, we can believe, the co-wife can believe the testimony, and the co-wife can get married as well. Okay, next Mishnah. Now we start talking about some simonim, some of the signs that we identify a person with to make sure the nebuch that they're dead. So the Mishnah tells us, "Ein me'idin ella al partzuf panim im hachotem." In order to testify that somebody is dead, that you recognize them, you have to recognize their facial features. And the Mishnah tells us the facial features include the partzuf, which is most of the face, im hachotem, with the nose as well. Again, there are different definitions as to what is included in this partzuf. We'll right now learn it nice and simple: most of the face as well as the nose. And even though there may be other simonim on his body or on his clothing, which the Gemara will explain what exactly that means, those are not acceptable. But if you don't have the parts of panim imachotem, you can't pronounce this person to be the person that you're saying that they are, and that that person actually died. Mishnah continues and says, you're not allowed to testify that somebody's dead until you actually see the life has left their body. They have to actually be dead. Not that they're about to die, not that they're very, very sick, but they actually have to be dead in order to be able to, for a person to testify accurately that the person was in fact dead. And therefore, va'afilu ra'ahu meguyad, even if you were to see the person meguyad. Rashi explains that the word meguyad comes from a lashon of gudu ilana, to cut down a tree, menutach, cut up into pieces, umale betzoyim, and full of wounds. The chaburos cherif, and these are the wounds of a sword, for example. So even though a person had many, multiple slices on his body from a sword, unless you see him dead, you're not allowed to say, well, he probably died. That won't count. So if you're maguyad, now Rashi says that the next vav is or. Either maguyad we don't allow, or vitzolov, if you see a person. Rashi says, alatzliva. He's hanging on what normally means a cross, but here it could mean just hanging. So he's hung. The person is hung. So therefore, in this situation, he is also, unless you see him dead, the fact that he's hanging from this tree or this sliva from this cross doesn't mean that he's dead until you actually see him dead. And finally, the, and Rashi translates this as or as well, the achaya ochelismo, or a wild animal is eating him. So even though the wild animal looks like he has him knocked unconscious and is literally eating him alive, but you can't say that he's dead until you actually know that he is dead. The fact that the lion is eating him, the wild animal is eating him, isn't enough until you actually see him dead. That's the way Rashi learns this. The Rambam actually learns the vav here is an and. So even if you see him cut up into pieces and he's hanging and a wild animal is eating him, nevertheless, until you see that he's actually dead, it doesn't count. Then the Mishnah concludes and tells us, Ein me'idin ela ad shlosha yomim. You can only tell who the person is by recognizing them in the first 3 days after their death. But beyond that, the body decomposes and you can't verify that this person is really who that they are. Rav Yehuda ben Bava disagrees. Rav Yehuda ben Bava omer, lo kol ha'odam, lo kol ha'makom, lo kol ha'shol shomim. He says, you can't make general rules over here. Every case is different, and not every person is the same, and not every place is the same, and not all the times are the same. And the Gemara will explain what Rav Yehuda ben Bava is actually telling us. Gemara starts and says, Tana Rabban, we learn the following braisa, padachas. If you just see the padachas, that's normally translated as the forehead. Again, there are differences of opinion as to what part of the body is actually there. So you testify about the padachas, but below parts of panim, but the rest of the face is not there, or it's not recognizable. Or parts of panim, below padachas, or most of the face is there, but not the forehead. In both of these situations, where you only have half, so to say, of the proof, ein me'idin, you're not allowed to testify that this was so-and-so, unless actually shneim imachotim, you need to have both of them with the nose, as we said previously. So you need the parts of, you need the padachas, and of course you need the nose as well. That's what the braisa says. Where do we see this? From on my Rabbi Vitim Rav Kahana, either Rabbi or Rav Kahana said, it's based upon the following pasuk that we have from Yeshaya, where it says, Ma'ikra hakaras pineyem ansubam. They were able to recognize their faces, and that testified as to who they were. Okay. Now the Gemara continues and says, Abba Bar Marta, who was also known as the who? Abba Bar Minyumi. So either his mother's name was Marta, his father's name was Minyumi, or there are other explanations given elsewhere in the Gemara. He's given even additional names. In any event, this great sage, Abba, he told us, Havamaske Be Deresh Gilusa Zuzik. He owed money to the house of the Resh Galusa. Now, the house of the Resh Galusa wasn't always the most honorable of people. It was oftentimes a bought position, and it could be a position that was taken over by the not the highest of caliber people. They just were strong-armed people, as was this case, as we'll see. So he owed them a lot of money. And the Anaf Yosef, in answer to an obvious question, is going to explain that they were treating him very terribly. They were doing things well above and beyond what they were allowed to do to a person that owed them money. So this Abba Bar Marta was literally fearing for his life. So what did he do? Isa Kira, he took some wax, Dovak Bibliosa, he smeared it onto some sort of a shmata, and then Dovak Biapuse, and then put it on his face to disguise himself. And in this manner, Chalav Kamai, he was able to pass in front of these members of the house of the Resh Galusa, these strong-armed people, the Lo Bashkuruha, and they didn't recognize him. So the obvious question, which I'm sure all of you are thinking, is the Anaf Yosef's question, and he said, how could he possibly do this? He owed them money. How could he disguise himself and hide from them if he owed them money? So as I alluded to, the Anaf Yosef says they were treating him in a horrible way. They were, you know, doing all sorts of very evil and wicked things to him, maybe hurting him, torturing him, doing other things to him that were well above and beyond what would be allowed to be done if a person never can't pay your money. If a person can't pay money, so then he can't pay money. You're not allowed to do certain things to him. And these people were doing terrible things to Abba Bar Minyumi or Abba Bar Marta. And as a result, the Anaf Yosef says that's why he was allowed to disguise himself in order not to get beaten up, in order not to run into whatever trouble they were giving him. Then we said in the Mishnah, we said that even though there are simanim, you can't use these simanim. You need to have the partsuf and the panim, and the nose has to be present as well. So Gemara says, Lameimra, seems from a Mishnah, the simanim, lav daraisa. It seems from a Mishnah that just having simanim, that's not good enough. That's not daraisa. But how can that possibly be? Or mini, we have another braisa that says otherwise. This other braisa says, Mitzoh kosher bekis, uva arniki, uva tabas. If somebody had lost the get, and then they found the get, and it was tied into his wallet, or into his bag of money, or into his rings, which are very personal items. This is the signet rings, which are basically proof that that's who he is. And if somebody else got that, that would be a very terrible thing for him. They could basically, like a credit card, they could go take his credit card and use it elsewhere. So in this situation, if they found the get in his possession, so then you can definitely say it's his, and you don't have to be concerned that it was a different get. Or alternatively, Oshanim Sobei Kalim, they found it amongst all of his other Kalim. So then, Afilu Zman Aruba, even if it's a long period of time, kosher. This get is still valid, and we can assume it's the same get that was lost. Now, these are all simanim. So why do we say in our Mishnah that simanim aren't good? Seems to outright stira with this brisa. So when it says, no problem, or Rabbi Elokasha, there isn't a stira over here. Two different Tanoic opinions. Ha Rabbi Eliezer ben Mahavoy, ha Rabbanon. The brisa that we just brought down, that is Rabbi Eliezer ben Mahavoy, who says that there are such a thing as simanim. So therefore, in the braisa, when you found the get, kosher b'kis, of Einiki, v'tabas, ben Caleb, that's perfectly good. That's the opinion of Eliezer ben Mahavoy. But our Mishnah disagrees with that opinion. That's the opinion of the Chacham. Say there is no such thing as simanim. The Tanya, and I'll show you that this is right thing where it says, from the following braisa, Ein mi'idin ala shuma. You're not allowed to go testify that this dead person is who he is based upon a shuma. Rashi has a foreign language word, veruha, which sounds like it means some sort of like a warty type of a structure. And others say it's like a mole, some sort of a skin lesion. So the braisa says that you can't testify if you find a dead body because it has a mole, a certain type of skin lesion on it. That's the opinion of the Chachamim. Ah, ain't simanim. And Rabbi Eliezer Ben Mavoi says, no, Mi'idin, you can. Because, after all, he says that this is a good simon. So isn't this the Machokis? My lab Hokum Ifligi. The Marasavar Simonim Daraisa. Rabbi Eliezer Ben Mavoi, he holds that Simonim are Daraisa. That's why he accepts this Shuma, because that's a simon Daraisa. And it's perfectly good. Whereas the Chachamim, they disagree. Marasavar Simonim is only the Rabbanim. And therefore, our Mishnah, which doesn't accept Simonim, must be like the Chachamim. And the Braisa, which says that you can return the get to the man amongst whose possessions it was found, and who had lost such a get, holds that that's acceptable because it's Simonim Daraisa. So that's Abaye's Teretz, and the Gemara says, not so fast. Omar Rava, no. In fact, that's not the Machlokas. The Kuliyama, both the Chachamim and Rabbi Lezim and Amavoy, both of them hold Simonim Daraisa. Everybody holds Simonim Daraisa. So why was the Shuma a different case? Why by the Shuma did we say that you're not allowed to be me'idin ala Shuma? Hocha b'Shuma mitzuya b'ben gilu k'mivligi. They're talking about a common mole. So a common type of a mole, ma'asav Shuma mitzuya b'ben gilu, is not going to be a good simon. So therefore, the Chacham said, ain't me'idin ala Shuma. But Rebbe Lozar ben Ma'avai, he says, no, this is an unusual Shuma. Ma'asav ain't mitzuya b'ben gilu. This is a very uncommon mole, and therefore that's why it's allowed. So that's Teretz number one. Teretz number two, Rika the Amre, in fact, Rava said as follows. He does agree that everybody holds a Simonim or the Oraisa. So why did the Shuma, Rabbi Lozim and Ravai, say that it's good? This is a type of Shuma that changes after the death of a person. So therefore, in this Braisa, where the Chacham say you can't use it, so Ma'ar Sovai, the Chacham hold, this is a type of a Shuma, Asui Lishtanos Liachamisa. It changes after Misa, and therefore you can't rely upon it. However, this type of a shuma doesn't change after death, and therefore it's a perfectly good simon. Vika the Amrei, a third way of understanding this is as follows. Rava actually said the Kuliyama Simonim de Rabbanan. In fact, everybody holds it Simonim de Rabbanan. So why, in the case of the Shuma, did Rabbi Lozar and Ravai say it's acceptable to declare the person dead? V'halcha b'shuma, we turn to Kuf Chof Omud Beis. Simon Muvok Komivli. They're arguing about how much of a perfect simon this is. A simon muvuk is a very, very special type of a simon. It's so particular to that one individual that you can take it to the bank. It's unique. And therefore, they're arguing about this shuma, whether the simon muvuk komifligi. Marasav our simon muvuk. Rabbi Lezer ben Mavoi says this simon is a simon. It's a mole in the shape of Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, it's an absolutely good simon. You can take it to the bank. Whereas Umayasav Ad Chacham hold, no, Lav Simon Muvuk, it's a mole, and many people have moles, and therefore you can't use this to prove that that's who this person is, Nebuch, this dead person, to allow his wife to remarry. Now the Gemara says, according to the opinion of Rava, L'hach Lishal Yom Rava Simonim Daraisa, according to the opinion that said Rava holds a Simonim Daraisa, so Hawk Ketani, so why did our Mishnah say, Afal Bishayesh Simonim Begufu Bekelav, that we don't accept Simonim, if everybody agrees that Simonim Daraisa, so why did our Mishnah say that Simonim aren't good? Everybody agrees that Simonim are good. So where it says, Gufo, the simon that they gave for the body that we said is no good in the Mishnah was the Aruch or Gutz, that the guy was tall or the guy was short. That's not a good simon. There are many people that are 6'3". There are many people that are 5'3". And therefore, if all you do is say, yeah, this person must be Yanka because he's 6'3", his dead body is 6'3", that's not called a simon mavok. Likewise, the Kalev, why did we not accept that there was a certain type of clothing that they found the dead guy in? Because the Chayshin and L'Shela. Yes, that could be his jacket. It has his name inside of it. But how do you know he didn't lend it to somebody else and the guy that he lent it to never is the dead guy in front of us? So Gemara says, wait a second. V'Chayshin and L'Shela. If you're telling me that we are concerned about Shela, so how come elsewhere we do accept something as being definitively a simon and we're not concerned about Shela? Where do we find something definitively is considered a simon? Chamor. If you have a donkey and you want to claim that that's your donkey, bisimoni ukaf hechim adrinan. So we said in that halacha that if you can identify the saddle of the donkey, so then you can definitely state that that donkey is yours. But you know the saddle wasn't borrowed, and therefore maybe in this situation the donkey is somebody else's, but he borrowed the saddle. So where it says lo shaili inishuchba, people don't go and lend out their saddles. It's a very personal type of item to call maskev le lechamra. Because if somebody else were to go and change its shape or form in some way, so then when you put it back on your donkey, it's going to ruin the back of the donkey. It's very personalized. It's like a pair of shoes. People don't lend shoes usually because your foot fits the shoe. You over time, you mold the shoe into fitting perfectly for your foot. If somebody else wears it, they're going to break it from the perfect mold that it had for your foot. So too, with the donkey's saddle, people didn't lend that out. Likewise, We had the case of Matzo, Kosher, Bekis, Ma'ainiki, Betabas, Hechi Madrinun. If you're telling me that we have to be concerned about lending it, so maybe this get was in his purse, but maybe he lent the purse to somebody else, and it's actually a different get. So the word says, no, people don't lend certain things. Tabas, Choyish li Zayufe. Nobody lends their signet ring, because the signet ring is, like I said, a credit card. If you give somebody a credit card, they can go use it, so there's no way that they could be stopped. So if somebody has your signet ring, so they could charge anything they want by just signing your name with your signet ring. So therefore, people didn't lend their signet ring. So therefore, you don't have to be concerned that if they found the get next to your signet ring, that you would lend your signet ring to somebody else. And likewise, kiss, iron key, the wallet of a person, and the bag of a person. So menachashe inshe v'lo moshli. People are very strange about these things. You know, it's my good luck hat. It's my good luck wallet. So people didn't lend out their wallets or their bags to other people because it was their good luck. And if you lent it to somebody else, they would get your good luck. So therefore, it was very uncommon to lend them. And that's why it is a good simon. But other things which aren't a good simon, so then they're not a good simon. Or alternatively, if you buy the same, you can say Kalev. It was also not a very good simon mavuk. He was wearing clothing, so he was wearing a white shirt. Okay, a lot of people wear a white shirt, or a sumke, or he's wearing a colored shirt, a red shirt. So a lot of people wear a red shirt, so that's not a valid simon mavuk. Then we said in the Mishnah, we said, like Rashi understood, that each one was a separate case, even if you saw a man who'd been chopped up, but until you actually saw that he died, you're not allowed to testify that he died, even though it looks like he has a mortal wound. So where it says lemeimra, that implies the maguyad chai, that a person who has this mortal type of a sword wound, he has all sorts of cuts all over him, could survive. Is that true or minu? But the Mishnah in Olos tells us that you can't survive. Adam eino mitame achetetzin afsha. A person only becomes tame at his death. He has tumas hakuf. He has tumas adam only. Tumas meis only after he dies. But if he was afilu meguyad, if he was chopped up into all sorts of slices, afilu goses, or even if he's in the last few hours or maybe a day or two or three of his life, so even though he's on death's door, tamuye lo metame, he's not metame. However, from the fact that it says he's not metame, it doesn't say because he could be alive, ha michya lo choy. There's no way he'll be alive. Just he's not metame right now. But he's certainly going to die. So how can you tell me from the Mishnah and Olos that a person who is not Muguyid, he's obviously going to die. The Mishnah and Olos tells he's going to die. So how can you tell us that he's not going to die? So Abaye says, no, it's not a problem. Or Abaye Lokasha again. Ha Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, ha Rabbanan. It's two different opinions. The Mishnah follows the Chachamim. Where is that? The Tanya, we learn the following Braisa. Me'idin ala Muguyid, that you can testify if a person was all chopped up, that he is dead. However, v'ein me'idin ala tzolot, but you can't go and testify about somebody that just was hanging on a cross, because that person still could survive. Until you know that he in fact actually died, you can't testify. But along comes Rav Shimon Elazar, and he disagrees. Omer, he says, afal maguyid ein me'idin. Even the maguyid, you can't go and testify that he is definitely dead, because v'bnei sheyochol lekavos v'lichyos, because his wounds could become shrunken. In other words, if you take a piece of hot metal and you singe it, you literally today, what we do in the operating room, we call it cautery. You take a hot item and you singe the bleeding vessel, and it will stop. You'll singe it by, you'll seal it off. So therefore, they knew that as well in those days, that maybe, even though this guy looks like he's bleeding to death, if you go and cauterize his wounds, so he'll survive. So therefore, the fact that you see a person with all these bleeding cuts doesn't mean he's definitely going to die. So our Mishnah says that a person can survive this. That's in accordance with the opinion that we just said of Rav Shimon ben Elazar, who says, Afal Maguyid Ein Me'idin. Whereas the Mishnah that says that a person will definitely die, so our Michya Lo Chai, so that goes according to the opinion of the Chachamim. Where it still questions this, it says, well, me, Matzis Lukamek, Rav Shimon ben Elazar, how can you possibly establish our minion as being that of Rav Shimon ben Elazar? Because keep on reading to the next part of the Mishnah, which we'll learn in tomorrow's Shia. Voktoni Sefer, again, the Mishnayis that we have don't always have the Reish and the Sefer together. In the Mishnayis, they're all one long Mishnah. But sometimes in the Gemara, they're broken up. So here's another example of that. We have multiple examples of that. So look on Daf Kuf Chof Aleph, tomorrow's Shia. It says over there, that's called the Sefer of our Mishnah, Maisa Ba'asya, there once was a Maisa Shehoya in Asia, Be'echad, in a person, Sheshil Sheluhu Layam. They lowered him down into the ocean. Below also the Yadam El Araglo. So he's going, they're lowering him down to go get pearls or whatever it is. He's a deep sea diver and he's on a rope so they can make sure that he comes back up, and they pull him up, and all they have is his leg, the leg that he was tied to. The rest of his body is eaten away. So the Chacham said, no, it depends. We don't assume this guy is dead. If the part of the leg that we have left includes above the knee, so then definitely this person died. Nobody can survive an above the knee cutting off of the leg, and therefore his wife is permitted to marry. Tinase. That's what the Chacham said. However, if it's a below the knee amputation over here, if the shark or whatever fish went and bit off his legs, and all we have left is this leg, so you can't assume that he ate up the rest of the person. The wife cannot go and get married, because we say that a person who has a below the knee amputation can survive, and it's an above the knee amputation that can't survive. Now, why is this a problem? If our Mishnah is, in fact, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, so then Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says that always you have to be concerned that the person could survive, because it could be covets, it could be cauterized, and therefore maybe even above the knee amputation he could survive. So he says, no, water is different. Shiny Maya, water is different. The Marzumaka, water will make the wound worse. It will get it dirty, it will get it infected, and therefore there's no way that cauterization will work on such a wound. The guy, Nebuch, is a goner. So that's why, in this situation, we say that even though Shimon Elazar elsewhere says that a person might survive because of cautery, he won't be able to survive if the wound was in the water. Heidi Gemara says, V'amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, L'didi Chazi Li Ha'utaya, D'shokil Saf Sira, V'gaide L'gamle. Rabba Bar Bar Chana said, I myself saw a certain Arab that took his sword and he cut off the leg of his camel. Now, before I should point out, this was above the knee, V'lo Asakite L'neruse, and the animal died right away. So how can you tell me that if it's an above-the-knee amputation, the animal won't die? Here you see that it clearly does die. So Abaye says, no, it depends. A weak animal, will not be able to survive, but a very stark, strong animal could even survive an above-the-knee amputation. Now we have another teretz to reconcile. Our Mishnah would said that the one who has the wound can possibly survive. He's all cut up, he can survive. And the Mishnah would said, no, that he's not tame, but he's certainly going to die. So Rava gives us another teretz. Rava Mar Bisaki Milubenis. We're dealing over here that these sharp cuts were made with a white hot sword. And the white hot sword, Divrei HaKol. Everybody agrees that you can cauterize the wound in that situation. Okay. Then we quote our Mishnah, V'chayo chelesuchule. You can't testify that a person is dead even though you see him being eaten by a wild animal. So Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel Lo Shanu. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel says that this is only taught, Ella Mimakum Sheinafshe Yotza. If the animal wasn't eating him from a place where his body would die. You can't assume he's dead if the animal's eating him, nibbling on his toes, if the animal's nibbling on his arm. But if he's nibbling on a place where the person would die if that was eaten up, right? He's eating his chest and he's going to eat his heart. So then, in that situation, you would be allowed to go and testify. If a person cut somebody else's throat, and he either cut two, the trachea and the esophagus, or Rosh Naim, or the majority of the trachea and the esophagus, and this person who's so severely cut staggers away and we can't find the body. So in this situation, may eat him. Since the majority of the trachea and the esophagus were cut, there's no way that this guy could survive. So here's another example where you don't have to actually see him dead, but if he had such a severe wound, there's no way he could survive. More questions this, Ini, really? This guy Nebuch was attacked viciously and somebody slit his throat and they cut through the majority or all of his trachea and esophagus. So you know he's going to die. But he's not considered dead yet. If while he's dying, he signals or writes, Romaz Omar, and he signaled, Kisu get li ishti, go make for my wife forgets. She won't have to fool Yibam. The brother maybe lives far away and wouldn't be able to do Yibam for many years. So in this situation, we do allow the divorce. Hare elu yichtavu v'yidnu. So, divrei shchivim rak yiksuvim mesurim dami. So, you see that he's considered still a live person. Yeah, he's a shchivim, he's going to die, but he's not considered dead yet. So Shmuel considers him that he's alive, even though both of his trachea and windpipe were either majority or totally slit. So where it says, no. In regards to, is he alive right now? Yeah, chayu, right now. However, he's going to die. Nobody can survive such an injury. The sofalamos, and in fact, he's going to die very, very shortly. So it's not a steer to say that he can still give a get, even though he is a dead man. He's a dead man walking, but he's not a dead man yet. Shmuel says, really? Elamayata, if what you're saying is true, so ye gola yado. So then if somebody were to do this and go and cut the trachea and the esophagus by accident, he's swinging an axe and he doesn't see a guy walking in front of him, and as he's swinging the axe down on the tree, so a guy's head goes there and he cuts through the trachea and the esophagus of this poor guy. So that should be, if you're telling me that the slitting over here of the guy's trachea and esophagus is equivalent to dying, so then Alo Matanya, so why do we learn in the Braisa that in that situation, Shoch HaShnayim Orov Shnayim, Hareza Eino Gola, the guy is not considered to have died from your wound. He's considered to have died from something else. What are you talking about? He's dying from your wound, from your slitting his throat by accident. So he says, no, that was asked and answered over there. Hoyit Maralo, we already asked about that, and Rav Hoshaya gave us an answer. Amr Rav Hoshaya, Chayshinan, in that situation, we have to be concerned that it wasn't just your axe that caused his death. Shema HaRuach Bilbalto. You know what happened over here? There's a wind blowing. And yes, he's staggering around with a slit trachea and esophagus, but then the wind comes and finishes the job. And therefore, in this situation, if it's Zev Zeh Gorim, if there are two things that cause it, then he doesn't go into Golos. So that's what Rav Hoshaya gives us as an answer. Alternatively, Inami, Shemo, Ihu, and we turn to Kufchav Aleph, Omer Aleph, Kirev, Misoso, Nebuch, the poor guy in his death thrashing about, he's the one that actually caused himself to die a little bit faster. So it's not the guy that just cut the trachea and the esophagus, it's either the wind in the first scenario, or the dead person himself, the guy who's about to die, his thrashing about caused his own demise. One says, is there an afkamina between these two reasons, whether it was the wind or the dead person thrashing about? Might be nayu. One says, yeah. The shachte beveisa de shisha upirkis. If he was slaughtered, if he was had his throat slit by accident in this house that is made out of shisha, shisha's marble, and there is no wind over there. And upirkis, but the guy thrashed about. So then, even though there was no wind, so his pirkis went and caused his demise as much as the slitting of the trachea and esophagus. Alternatively, Inami, he shachted bivra, he shachted him outside where there was a lot of wind. However, Velopirkus, but he didn't thrash about at all. He became unconscious and then he died. So in that situation, so if you say it's because of the Pirkus, so then he would, then the person who killed him would be Chayev Golus because he didn't Pirkus. But if you say it's because of the wind, so then the guy would not be Chayev Golus because you could say that the wind did it in. And in the first scenario, where he shafted him inside this house that had no wind, so then, if there was no wind, according to the opinion that says it's the wind that did it, so then he would get, in fact, golus. But if you're saying it's the pirkus, so then he did pirkus, and therefore he wouldn't get golus. This concludes today's shiur. We only have two more datum left till the end of this beautiful mesechta.